Welcome to Radio Plays, a podcast devoted to presenting exciting new plays from around the world. This week, we're continuing with Act 2 of Emily MacLean's Copper Angel. While having found a vocation sculpting personalized facial masks for injured soldiers, artist Anna Coleman-Ladd struggles with how to maintain her work and wrestles with doubts regarding its effectiveness. Both her husband Maynard and Clarence, the soldier with whom she'd made a tenuous connection, push back against her efforts, and all struggle to maintain stability during the height of the war. Based on true events, Copper Angel delves into the physical and mental scars of conflict, the struggle of finding and holding on to one's calling, and the various ways love and patience aid in the difficult journey towards healing.
Oh, you came!
Yes, got your letter.
I wasn't sure. The address you left at the hospital was different, but there was a man who gave me the street name. I didn't know if you'd think that was some kind of a trick or...
What do you want?
I wanted to let you know I've opened a studio. The Red Cross has a room in their local office that is just for me. For my work, I mean. I can meet with soldiers, make molds, fit the copper prosthetic. It's a very nice setup.
Good for you.
I've made pieces for 20 men already. Some nose plates, cheeks, several jawline pieces. I have two assistants that work with me. Won't you sit down? Would you like something to drink?
I'll sit. Nothing to drink. Don't like to do that in public.
Very well. Are you living with your brother and his wife now?
Yes. Can't seem to find a job that will support me.
Oh. I'm terribly sorry to hear that.
Worked for a couple of weeks with a bricklayer. Hard work.
Yes, but good for you for having the strength to do that.
Worked at night, mostly. Sorting and stacking for the workers to assemble in the morning.
At night?
No one at the job site then. Could take my bandage off.
Oh.
There's a little boy that lives on my brother's street that calls me L'homme sans visage.
The faceless man?
Don't mind it, it's true.
Do you... Is there any chance you'll accept my help now? Let me make a mask for you? I'm not a novice, Clarence. I can help you.
Wasn't the reason I didn't want one before.
Well, why on earth not? It's just straight stubbornness for all I can tell. Don't you want to work in the daylight hours? To live on your own and not be afraid?
I'm not afraid.
Then what? There's no cost to you. I'm paid by the Red Cross now.
Paid well, I hope.
Yes. I suppose I am. It's rather specialized work. Not many people can do it. Even artists that would like to volunteer with me don't have the stomach for it.
Oh. You are doing good work. For others. I don't want it for myself.
But why? I need you to explain to me. If you could see how the lives of these men change. They change for the better when they have their masks.
It's a lie, isn't it?
What?
Their lives aren't changed. Nothing's changed. They're just hiding what's happened to them.
Oh no, I don't see it that way at all.
Doesn't matter much how you see it. You've still got your face full and intact. You're not la femme sans visage.
The mask doesn't change what happened to you. It doesn't erase what you've suffered, I know that. No one is suggesting that exactly, but... Please, Clarence. My heart aches for you. You deserve to be made whole again. I can't fully restore everything that was lost. I can't undo the past. But you deserve...
I deserve nothing. I want to be reminded of the men that didn't come back, who would have been grateful to spend the rest of their days missing a part of a jaw. It's wrong to hide it, to pretend it didn't happen.
Even if your injury is keeping you from feeling you can live your life as you want to, your men wouldn't want you to suffer because you survived. You are worth a fully lived life. That would honor them more, wouldn't it? We won't discuss it anymore. I'm sorry I brought it up. Please just stay a while and talk with me. I've missed talking with you. Oh, let me tell you about what's happening at the hospital since you've left. There's a soldier that has trained a stray dog to bring him the newspaper every morning. He he pays the dog with bacon, and several of the other soldiers have started trying to get the dog to bring them the paper instead by offering more food. The dog is getting so fat, in a few weeks he won't be able to bring the paper up the garden steps. The matron let me plant some flowers in the yard, and they've come in beautifully.
Maman! Look, Maman! It's a monster man!
Oh, no, sweetheart. He is not a monster. Shh.
No! Maman, don't make me walk past the monster man!
Shh, now. That's enough.
No.
Bonjour, madame. Bonjour, mon petit chou.
Bonjour, père.
Maman.
Avez-vous pris une décision?
Ah oui.
Leur avez-vous parlé?
Aujourd'hui, oui. D'accord.
D'accord, merci, père.
Au revoir.
Allons-y, monsieur.
Au revoir. Au revoir.
We have to balance the needs of our congregations, all of our members. As this war has dragged on a few years more than anyone initially expected it to, the wounded soldiers are a growing part of that population, but still small compared with the whole, so... When a group of women came to me and asked if I would speak to some of the more intensely impacted men at first, I mean, after all, they sacrificed so much. Shouldn't those that have survived, especially those which sustained these horrific injuries, shouldn't they be afforded our respect, to be allowed to continue their lives with dignity? Ugh, merde. But that is easier to stomach when you are talking about a man missing an arm or a leg. We maintain his essential humanity, but a man that is walking around without a nose or a jaw, the grotesqueness of it is frankly unsettling. So I don't fault these women for how they felt. After all, I felt much the same way, if I'm honest. But what is to be done, huh? Ask them to come to a less crowded morning service? To wear some kind of scarf or a mask, or turn them away entirely? My mind goes to the story of Jesus and the lepers. But this scenario is a little different, I suppose. I had no idea what the best course of action would be. But I could not ignore the complaints of the parishioners. Ultimately, I spoke with several of the men and explained this situation to them. They were understanding. Most of them had faced similar situations in other aspects of their lives already. Oh, can you imagine how it must feel to go through life knowing that you are a horror to look upon?
Have you been able to eat anything solid, Corporal Jameson?
No, sir.
Is that due to lack of appetite or discomfort with your jaw?
Both.
But you are able to eat a liquid diet, broth, and the like. Corporal?
Sir?
Are you able to eat if the food is soft or strictly liquid?
I don't know. I haven't tried anything else.
Oh, dear. I'm terribly sorry. Didn't mean to startle you.
Calm down. Steady on. Steady.
It's just a nurse. Corporal, you're safe here.
Yes.
I'm concerned that you aren't eating enough, that your body isn't going to be able to heal properly. How can we encourage you to eat solid food?
I'm sorry, sir. I'm not hungry.
I'd be happy to bring you something home cooked. Is that what you're missing? What was your favorite meal before the war?
I don't remember.
Oh. There. It's all right. It's going to be all right.
I don't remember anything before.
Yes, that's normal. Your memory will come back.
What if it doesn't?
It's important to stay positive. Try to eat something solid today, all right?
Yes, sir.
That's a good lad.
Doctor?
Yes?
That young man is very damaged. He's scared of his own shadow.
He survived the German attacks on Somme. His battalion was under constant bombardment for a week. The field surgeons amputated his arms, but they didn't expect him to survive the trip back to us. He's alive, And damn lucky to be that way. He survived all that, and now this foolish refusal to eat is going to kill him. Yeah, it's maddening. See that he eats today. Accept no excuses.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
Nothing, Doctor.
You think he's the only damaged young man I've seen this week? This morning, even?
Of course not, but some of these men seem wounded mentally, as well as physically.
You're starting to sound like that Derwent Wood person Anna is always going on about. I don't want you going soft, nurse. When a nation declares war, it is the responsibility of every patriot to stand up and be counted. These men have injuries, but they are alive. By God's mercy and modern medicine, they're still alive, and they are so ungrateful. I don't understand it.
You have been working extremely hard as of late. These last few months have been trying for the hospital staff. Perhaps you could rest a little at home with your wife?
I'm sorry?
We all reach our breaking point, sir. Even the most skilled among us may suffer from working too hard for too long. You are an exceptional surgeon, and you've saved so many lives. But perhaps this sentiment you're expressing now, it might be better if
That is uncalled for, nurse. I'm perfectly capable of judging my capacity for handling the stress of this job.
Of course, Doctor. I was not suggesting you were anything less.
See to your patients, nurse. Make sure he eats something before tonight.
Yes, Doctor. Thank you.
Anna slowly walks in, guiding Clarence by the hand.
He is wearing his bandages to cover his wound.
We kneel together,
facing each other.
Anna creates a pattern of movement with her hand. And after a moment,
Clarence mimics her.
We dance together like this, until Anna's movements close in on the bandages. She goes to remove them, and
Clarence resists. He stands up, starting to back away.
When Anna catches his hands, drawing him close to her, she is confident and calm in her movements, touching his arm and gently guiding his hand to the bandages.
His hand drops away, and he shakes his head.
Anna steps back, giving him space.
He breathes in and out, then nods at her. Clarence allows Anna to remove the bandages.
She drops them to the floor, revealing him wearing his mask that makes the flesh of his neck and jaw appear healed and undamaged.
Clarence touches the skin, looking out as if seeing himself in a mirror.
Anna moves behind him, looking into the same mirror. She makes an adjustment on the mask. She moves to the side to look in his eyes.
He is overcome.
And she smiles at him, touching his arm gently.
He brings her hand to his lips, kissing the palm reverently. He turns and exits with purpose and confidence.
Anna brings her hand up to her chest, grasping it tightly. She stands very still.
I didn't know if you wanted to take the mask supplies back to America. Will you be continuing this endeavor there?
I suppose not.
Did you finish with the young man from this morning?
Yes. He was very happy with the results. I matched his skin tone perfectly, he said. He told me he had a birthmark on his cheek that I recreated on the mask. He was thrilled to see it. He told me he'd been ashamed of it before, but he said it made him feel more like himself to see it in the reflection when he looked in the mirror.
That's good.
Yes. Maynard, are you upset to be leaving?
No. The field hospital's work is done. No more war, no more newly wounded soldiers. It's a blessing to be able to go home after such a long time.
Of course. You've done an amazing amount of good here. You helped so many soldiers. Truly, you should be proud.
Thank you.
You've packed your good shoes with a bottle of ink. Do you think that's wise?
I didn't notice. Would you mind...
Here. Perhaps packing it with papers and things would be better.
Yes. Thank you.
I don't know what you want me to say.
What are you talking about, Anna?
You seem angry with me, distant.
I am not.
Ah. It must be my imagination, then. Well, I'm very tired. Is there any lamb stew left from last night?
No, it's gone.
Very well.
Would you... Can I make you something?
That won't be necessary. Thank you, dear.
Are you sad to be leaving your work?
Yes. I've felt more alive here than anywhere else on Earth.
You're different now. A more... I'm not sure how to define it. Self-assured.
Is that a bad thing?
No, it's just different. I hardly know what to say to you anymore.
Maynard, don't be silly.
I'm not. I genuinely don't know what to talk to you about. You've got this whole other existence that is separate from me. It wasn't like that before.
Darling.
Are you going to be able to return to your life in Boston?
Why wouldn't I be able to do that?
Are you going to be content with what you had before, or a life before we came to France? You're never going to be content to go back, are you? It would be like trying to unring a bell.
Why does that upset you so? You've changed too during your time here. This experience has altered us both. Surely you see that.
How have I changed?
Maynard.
I haven't changed. I'm precisely the same as I was when I got here. A little more gray around the temples, perhaps. Maybe a few more wrinkles. It's been over 2 years. My sense of myself hasn't changed.
I suppose that's true. But I didn't have the same understanding of myself in Boston that I have now. I'm a more complete person now.
That's what I mean! This idea that you weren't a complete person in Boston. That the lovely woman I fell in love with and married wasn't complete. It's insulting. It's an insult to your past self and me for choosing to love this flawed specter.
But I wasn't complete, Maynard. I was... I was a candle looking for a dark room.
That's nonsense.
You don't think you've changed? You don't hear how impatient you are with everyone? You went for the better part of 2 years on little sleep, constantly working and overseeing countless surgeries, performing operations, seeing all these horrific injuries that these poor men received. And while you were able to help so many, there were quite a few you couldn't. I hear you in your sleep, reliving those moments.
Dear Madam Collant, my deepest condolences and sympathies to you on the receipt of this letter. I've been asked by the commander of your son's unit to describe to you his final moments, to let you know that despite the injuries he sustained in service to his country, he passed away in peace and dignity. He was brave and strong until his... Dear Mrs. Malloy, Please accept my deepest sympathy at the tragic loss of your son. His life was cut short in service, and all who spoke of his actions on the battlefield attest to his strength and bravery. Facing certain death at the hands of an unrelenting foe who utilizes weapons that poison the very air, causing prolonged, painful, disgusting... Thank you. Thank you, nurse. Thank you. Dear Madam Vincent, your precious son spent his last day on this earth, screaming in unimaginable agony. The blood poisoning from his infected wounds caused him tremendous pain, and the hospital lacked a proper amount of morphine to assuage it. He was completely delirious for the last hour, and his death can only be seen as a mercy from freeing him from a lifetime of pain. I'm grateful that you were prevented from seeing or hearing his last moments. No mother should have to. No person should have to. No more. No. Dear Mrs. Tate, I held your son's hand as he died. He asked for you. You couldn't hear him. He cried. There was nothing I could do. I cried with him. And then he died.
Darling, I hope I didn't wake you with my moving around.
No. You didn't wake me up. I haven't been to sleep.
Your mother and aunt stopped by yesterday to see you, but I told them you weren't feeling well. I hope that was all right.
Yes, yeah. I'm not receiving visitors, even family. What's all that?
Oh, one of the wives of the Board of Governors for the Boston Children's Hospital asked me to help with a charity case. She read about my work with the soldiers and the Red Cross, and she asked if I would donate my skills to some of the children with facial deformities. Similar to the soldiers, just not necessarily as traumatic. But perhaps this could do some good here, too.
She read about your work.
Yes. One of the war correspondents that was in France while we were there spoke with Derwent. He told him about me, and then he came and took some footage of my studio, the Red Cross setup. I didn't think anything of it, and honestly forgot completely that it happened. But now he's published some of his journals from his time, and the paper ran a little feature on it. And me.
Positive reviews at last.
Yes. Yes, they were.
Yes, positive reviews at last.
Oh, hello. Maynard, darling, look who's come to visit. Do you remember Captain Edgars? It was Captain, wasn't it?
No, Mrs. Ladd, I was just a sergeant. But I do appreciate the post-war promotion.
Sergeant Edgars, then. Maynard?
Hello, Dr. Ladd. You have a truly beautiful home.
Please forgive my husband, Sergeant Edgars. He's recovering from a procedure.
Nothing too serious, I hope.
No.
My wish is for a speedy recovery for him. I am grateful to find you at your home today. I knew it was a bit of a roll of the dice, but I'm only in Boston for a few days, and I couldn't pass through without at least trying to see you. To thank you, in person.
Why would you need to thank me?
Isn't it obvious?
Oh, I'm just glad you allowed me to help you. How is it holding up? Oh, pardon me. I realize you might not... Yes. Well, is it giving you any trouble? Some of the men who got masks early on had to come for repairs and replacements.
No, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Who's that? What's he doing here?
Maynard, it's Clarence Edgars. He was a patient of yours in France. I made a piece for him, too. He's traveled to America and is passing through Boston. It's really lovely to see you. I'm sorry we're in such a state right now.
No, it's my fault. Should have written first, asked permission. Thoughtless of me.
Nothing of the kind. I'm very pleased to see you. And it does my heart good to see a soldier I've worked with making his way in the world. It brings me such joy to see that you're doing well.
You did let me run away and hide. I was able to get a job, one that paid well, and I could live on my own, not be a burden.
That's wonderful, Clarence. Sergeant Edgars, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I'm very grateful to you. You're in my thoughts often.
Oh?
I hope I'm not overstepping my... This isn't what I came here to say. Never mind. Are you working on another mask?
Yes. Yes, I'm branching out. Aren't very many soldiers in need of help now that the war has ended. But I wanted to find a way to still be useful.
I couldn't imagine you'd be happy going back to painting portraits.
I still paint some. But, yes, that's true.
I'd have expected to find you caring for a child of your own by now.
Ah. No. Not exactly.
No, of course not. I'm sorry, that was... I didn't mean...
No, I understand. I had hoped that...
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said anything. Terribly rude of me.
So, tell me about your job. What line are you in now?
Machine fittings for factories. I help design the parts on some of the machinery, making sure the pieces fit precisely. Oh. Like my mask. Fit seamlessly.
Are you living in America now?
No, just visiting. Touring some different factories, looking at how you go about things on this side of the pond.
That sounds like interesting work.
Do you ever hear from any of the other men you helped?
Occasionally. A letter or photograph. One of the men sent me an invitation to his wedding. I didn't attend, of course, but just the fact that he thought enough of what I did to help him, well, it was lovely.
Anna!
Yes?
I thought I heard. Are you still working?
Yes, darling. A little more today. Shh. Just rest. There's no rush.
No rush.
Dr. Ladd is recovering, and we have to take our time these days.
I understand. I'm sorry. I know that road, and it's not a pleasant one to walk.
Yes. I suppose you would understand better than most.
Anna, may we speak candidly?
Oh, of course. Haven't we always?
Do you believe in fate?
What?
I survived several battles before my injury. Saw men I'd known since my first days in service, blown to pieces before my eyes. Felt invincible, but I wasn't. The mortar found me like the others. When I came to Toole, I was completely broken. I wished every day that I'd just died on the battlefield like my men. And when I was discharged from the hospital, I was planning to do it myself. But then I heard from you. And you convinced me to let you make this mask, and I felt reborn. You saved my life, Anna. Twice.
Clarence, please.
Do you know what you've given to me? You brought me back from the dead. You're my angel. I love you.
Oh, Clarence, please don't.
I'm not foolish enough to think you'd feel the same about me. I know what we are and what we aren't.
I'm married. Maynard is... well, he is many things. But he's my husband.
I know. But I felt I had to come here and tell you how I was... what I felt for you.
Why? It's... I'm fond of you, but this isn't... I'm sorry if I ever gave you an indication that this was a possibility.
Of course. I know that.
What do you want me to say?
You don't have to say anything. I may never come back to America. Likely we will never see each other again. But I needed you to know what you did for me. I've overstepped. See that now? But you mustn't ever doubt the miracles you've worked. For me, for all the other men, now for these children. Can't ever thank you enough.
Thank you, Clarence. I'm grateful for you, too. You taught me more than you know. I'm sorry you came all this way and I wasn't able to give you the response you were hoping to hear. If you ever need a replacement, just write to me. I still have your measurements in my notes.
I will. Goodbye, Anna.
Perhaps someday the sun will shine again.
And I shall see the skies are blue.
And feel once more I do not live in vain.
Although bereft of you.
Ever since I was a young girl, I have loved to surround myself with beautiful things. When I was able to create that beauty for myself through painting, I did so endlessly. It fascinated me to capture something unique about people's faces, but even more so to improve upon what nature made. Smooth out a wrinkle or leave out an age spot, gloss over a scar. Some called it conceit, but those portraits prepared me to understand that all we want is not vanity, but the comfort of the familiar. To see the face in the mirror we expect to see isn't vanity. It's reassurance. It's love.
Perhaps the golden meadows at my feet will make the sunny hours of spring seem gay.
And I shall find the white may blossom sweet,
though you have passed away.
Perhaps the summer woods will shimmer bright,
and crimson roses once again be fair.
And autumn harvest fields a rich delight,
although you are not there.
Maynard was never the same after we returned to America. Like so many others, he carries wounds that aren't easy to see, and oftentimes those are so much harder to heal because they aren't visible. I stood by him, though. I see glimmers of the man he was. I'm reminded of the life we had before. There's both pain and joy in that, I suppose.
Perhaps someday I shall not shrink in pain.
To see the passing of the dying year.
And listen to Christmas songs again.
Although you cannot hear.
Clarence never contacted me again. I like to imagine that he found someone to love him the way he deserved to be loved. I hope that I helped him on that journey in some small measure. He always looked at the world in the most unflinchingly honest manner. We need those people in the world.
But though kind, time may many joys renew.
There is one greatest joy I shall not
again,
know.
Again, because my heart for loss again was broken.
Because my heart for loss of
was broken long ago.
Was broken long ago.
By the end of the war, I had created 180 masks for soldiers with facial wounds. Most conservative estimates point towards 20,000 men sustained facial wounds so serious they were considered permanently disfigured. My contribution seems paltry in the face of that number. But my time in France made me realize my purpose, my true purpose, wasn't to bring beauty into the world, but to restore the beauty that was lost. Thanks again for listening to Radio Plays. If you liked what you heard and are interested in helping us share more amazing new works, check out our Patreon page where you can donate and even become a season sponsor. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Radio Plays. Copper Angel was written by Emily McLean and directed by Clay Brackney Wandelier. The cast featured Kara Limer as Anna Ladd, Sean M. Dale as Dr. Maynard Ladd, David Soika as Clarence Edgars and Blind Soldier, Anna Fontaine as Wife, Nurse One, and Young Mother, Olivia Long as Nurse Two, Wounded Soldier, and Child, and Robin Sneller as Recruiter, Doctor, and Priest. Sound design by Sean M. Dale with editing support from Clay Brackney Wandelier. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts to catch our next episode.